Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Insane in the Membrane.
Hello and welcome to Insane in the Membrane's top 10 biggest episodes in no particular order. We're building up to our third anniversary and a massive celebrity special show. Oh yes, with some past belters that might have gotten buried within our 150 episodes. That's the thing, because where we pump this out, they just get lost, and people, you know, some people, they can't find them, and they're like, we've had some massive names, so we thought we'd go back and bring those names forward so you can go over them if you've missed them, and also thanks to our patrons, without whom we wouldn't have gotten here. Our patrons like Lindsay Tune and Kat Horton, thank you guys for helping us get where we are. We wouldn't be able to do it without you, honestly. I really genuinely mean that. Thank you so much. This episode is from 2019. Again, I've been a big fan of this guest's music, and I'd moved to Essex, became friends with Stu Whiffin and Chris Glasson, who do the Hardcore Listings podcast. I mean, they're the reason that this podcast exists, you know. I haven't met them, this wouldn't have happened. So thanks to those guys, you get to have this brilliant podcast. It turns out that they were mates. They were mates, and their podcast goes out on the Distraction Pieces Network, which is Scroobius Pip. And as I said, I was a huge fan of Scroob's music. And then through them, got to know Scroobius, and I was like, would you come on the podcast? He's like, I'd be delighted, mate. So I came. He came on here. I went on his. Wonderful. And he was such a great. He's such an interesting dude. He's such a great chat. I did well not to fanboy him. You know, he was sitting in my flat and we were doing it, and I'm like, oh yeah, no, it's cool, it's cool, it's cool. And when he left, I'm like, oh, I can't believe it. Anyway, listen, let's have the episode. This is Scroobius Pip.
I was looking at seeing who Brock Lesnar was this morning.
Yeah.
He's a what a
I love man. It. I love yeah. all those things. I love MMA and wrestling yeah. and football are all ways that blokes can show emotion yeah, and not man. Feel bad about
you're
it. Like
right.
Football's always been the prime one for me. I've been going to Millwall since I was 5 years old, 4 or 5 years old, and South London, it's proper, it's hard blokes, it's serious men, yet they'll be in tears. I remember being at Wembley and me old man and all these hard South yeah, London men
yeah, yeah.
all in tears, all hugging each other, all kissing each other, and it's like, that's great. Like, you can hate on football a lot, for particularly with Millwall, where there's been hooliganism, yeah. racism, all yeah, this yeah. horrible shit. But the positive there is undeniable as well, of that kind of, that it allows men that maybe wouldn't show emotion normally,
oh,
or
absolutely.
Traditionally,
yes.
it's allowed men that wouldn't normally show emotion to show emotion. And I'm a big believer in the fact that all emotions are really important
absolutely.
For us to
yeah.
feel. And right. it sounds stupid, but I remember when we were in the playoff finals at Wembley against Scunthorpe, and Gary Alexander scored one of the best goals I've ever seen in my life, and we're winning. And in my mind, we were going up. Like, we've
right,
never
yeah.
been in the top league, and we were going up, this is it. And they got two goals before, I think, in injury time even, and it
wow.
was over. So that roller coaster of emotion, because again, it is only football, but if you followed that season,
yeah,
that's 8-9 months
oh, mate.
Of
yeah,
that's something that's really meant something to you,
yeah.
and suddenly it's over. So I always think back to that, of the ultimate high of thinking, we're going up, this is amazing, and then within 10 minutes,
yeah,
this whole year has been a waste. Do you know what I mean? It's mind-blowing.
And no one explains that.
No.
Even now, because I've said this before, said this many times before, that I don't follow football.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter, it's so ingrained in everything that you do. Mm. I'm still aware that Crystal Palace, which would be the team I would follow, I been. I'm not into it, I'm like, well, that would be my team, and this is why.
You've got your team even though you've not got a team.
Exactly, it's in you. Yeah. And it was a way back then of fathers, you know, bonding with sons and doing, like you say, stuff that men wouldn't normally
completely.
Do.
Completely. In my family, my parents split up when I was 16, and to this day, the reason Christmas isn't hard work is me and my dad go Millwall on Boxing Day, because there's always a Boxing Day match. So it makes it easy. In general, I spend Christmas with my mum and we got Millwall on Boxing Day.
Lovely.
So as stupid as, again, as throwaway as it seems, that's been a really important thing in the balance of getting used to, you know, a broken family or whatever you would call it. Yeah. It's like that's been a key part of it, because it solved the problem.
Yeah,
there's no argument. So, well, you had Christmas last year, so I get it this year. It's always just like, well, I'll see you on Boxing Day. We'll go Millwall. Job done. It's a weird one how things like that.
It's funny, though.
Yeah.
It's funny. It's really funny mentioning that. Growing up, I've got a mate called Tom. I've known Tom since I was 3 years old.
Yeah.
He's the reason that he became sort of like an older brother, and he was always introducing me to films and comedy. And he told me about Bill Hicks. He told me about music.
Amazing.
And, like, he introduced me to like a lot of hip hop stuff when we were growing up.
Yeah.
And then it got to when we were like teenagers and a bit older, and it was like we'd organise to go out, and then I'd let him down last minute. I was a bit flaky, to the point where his dad used to call me. My nickname was Reliable.
Right.
Because I'd always like, I can't make it, mate. I've got to do this.
Yeah.
It's fucking rubbish. And then a few years ago, a mate of mine, John, who got he got like the posh tickets for Chelsea.
Yeah.
The what do they call it? When you go and they give you food and all
yeah,
that. And he went, look, I can't go, but you want them? And I'm like that. My Tom and his dad, they're mad Chelsea. They've been Chelsea for years. And I went, actually, yeah, I do. I know exactly who to take. So I took my youngest son, I took my mate Tom and his dad, and we took them on Boxing Day. I hired a car, drove there. And then we did this amazing. We had this amazing day watching the football and the meals and the, you know, you get a toasted cheese sandwich in half time.
And
on the way home, I dropped him off and Ed just leaned in the car and he goes, "I've always loved you," and I was fuck, and it all because of football brought it.
Yeah.
Like it washed away all the shit.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah,
stuff like that.
Rebuilt it.
And again, it's not. It's finding an excuse to do that stuff. Football is just an excuse to feel those emotions and to have those moments, but we need an excuse sometimes. It'd be beautiful if we were all stable enough to not need an excuse to have a hug or to say I've always loved you or whatever else, you know what
that's
I mean
it, that's
but
it.
It's good to give us that, like we're not all stable enough. It's again, no. There's no point in imagining this fantasy world where we shouldn't need that. Yeah, we shouldn't, but we do.
But we do.
Yeah,
I know. But that, and it, because I'll get to a point and I'll be like, oh, fucking football. I hate football and I hate the people that watch it, because you see the stereotypes.
Completely.
And it's only having conversations like this with people like you, and you go, because you wouldn't look at you and go, he's obviously into his football, especially someone like Millwall.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's why I've always spoken about it so much, and I get some stick because online I'll be as vocal about the negatives. Side of it, and it pisses off a few of the Millwall fans because I've got a public face. It's weird. There was a recent one I tweeted about it a load because of previous guest of yours, Tez, because he did a post about the racism that was at one of the matches, and I did a huge thing. Him and Gus Khan were talking about it a lot, and Gus is a good mate of mine.
Yeah,
and I jumped in and was like, look, this is disgraceful. We shouldn't be shying away or making excuses. This is bad. And I had a few people come out and, like, a few Millwall fans, like, get really angry. And I had to point out, because, like, one guy had tweeted me just saying, it's weird how you only talk about the negative, or you only pop up when it's the negative side. And I had to point out, I did a thing on the BBC about how Millwall were the first team to complete all the levels of the the kick racism out of football program.
Yeah.
And again, I will also highlight, it's probably because we needed it the most. You know, but it's still, it's good that we were doing that as a club. I've been going on Soccer Home and all these things for years to talk about the positive side of Millwall, but that means you also have to address, it's the problem a lot of football clubs have, or fans have, is getting blinded by that place that they go and have their emotion.
Yeah,
like it can do no wrong. And they'll all talk about hatchet jobs in the press and stuff like that. And there is tons of that.
Yeah, yeah.
But you still, if there's video of your fans chanting racist shit,
of course,
the only response should ever be that isn't acceptable.
Yeah.
I'm embarrassed, I'm ashamed, and that's horrendous. It's being able to speak up on that and not feel that you're doing anyone a disservice other than those scumbags. Exactly. That's all you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like when people, like when there's any kind of big feminist thing and you have blokes come out going, well, not all men and all that kind of thing. It's like, well, unless you are one of the scumbags, you shouldn't be offended by this. I don't see stuff about having a go at some of the disgraceful way men act and feel it's attacking me,
because
I'm not that guy.
Exactly, I've said that same thing. Yes.
It's ridiculous, but it can be that kind of, that if you're getting defensive, then maybe have a little look at yourself and go, right, why?
Exactly.
Why am I feeling defensive on this?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, things with Millwall as well is, like, you know, their chant was, you know, no one likes us, we don't care. And that's all anyone knows. So
it's a problem, man. It's and again, it's ingrained. The slogan of, or the motto of my label, of my record label, is we may not be for you and that's fine.
Yeah.
And that's clearly come from no one likes us, we don't care. It's a toned version of that. It's a rewritten thing of that. Yet again, it is. It's a negative thing. It can make you go, whatever. Oh, we are who we are. It's like, no, we should still...
Yeah. Try and be more
there's
inclusive.
A level of it, yeah. It should be inclusive and all that kind of thing. But yeah,
Angles has been in my top 10 albums for many years.
Wicked.
And it's because of the lyrics, because I didn't expect there to be such deep, meaningful lyrics, because it was hip hop. You know, I didn't expect it. So the stuff that you cover in it, like, Letters from God to Man is something else, man. And Angles, the actual song Angles, and The Magician's Assistant.
Yeah.
Very deep, dark topics.
Yeah.
I was like, fuck, man. Like, but the ability to tell a story in such a short space of time.
Yeah.
Is something I've always liked in lyrics.
Yeah.
Was that from personal experience with those, or?
Storytelling was always an exciting thing for me in lyrics. All my lyrics are kind of, I always, except for one song, I always write a fictional story, but I draw from true events. It was that weird thing of starting off and not being comfortable going, well, either I or someone I know has been through this horrible thing.
Yeah.
Let's pop it on a track and have it on iTunes for 79p. It feels really weird to be profiting off it. So it's like, but I also think it's important to discuss these subjects.
Absolutely.
And to address these. It's why we always... 90% of our live shows, we played Magician's Assistant, and it's a downbeat song about self-harm and suicide.
Yeah.
Not exactly a club banger, but it was important to go, right, no, this is part of life. This shouldn't be only on the album. This should be something that we hit you with at the live gig. And hopefully you go away having had a good time, but there is something there to go, oh, that was interesting.
But it shows that it affects... Because a lot of people have been through it.
Yeah.
And a lot of people think, oh, this is only happening to me.
Yeah.
So by listening to someone like you talking about these things, they go, oh, fuck. Even if one person goes, oh, yeah, right.
And it is
other people.
It's
even like on both sides, they've been affected by suicide, or they're contemplating themselves and self-harming. And
100%. Yeah. And on the other sides of it, on the... When I had a woman called Natalie Clapshaw on my podcast,
who works for
Headway, and... we were talking about brain trauma, but one of the key bits of that podcast was that she was really adamant that she wants to talk about the effects of the partners of people who've got brain trauma, or the families, because again, it's so easy, or not easy, but it's kind of, if you're going, I need to talk about a topic, it's normally focusing on the main point of the topic, but any huge topic has got so many offshoots.
Absolutely.
That are so hard to understand and so hard to grasp, and it's why Magician's Assistant was kind of more about everyone else
yeah,
exactly in the situation, yeah, or more highlighting everyone else in the situation than simply here's someone who's going through a rough time. And it's a weird one because we were lucky that when we were making that album, we didn't expect anyone to ever hear it.
No, really.
So it meant that there was no...
So you're quite free.
Yeah, completely free. I've had people over the years say, oh, you're so brave to be open with your lyrics, particularly on that first album. It's like, I was open because I didn't think anyone would fucking hear it. I didn't really... It's not like, we didn't expect we'd have this huge audience all of a sudden. Yeah. But, yeah, it was important to have those... That openness, like we're lucky that we didn't expect anyone to hear it, and then that was a success. But that then meant that we were comfortable on all future albums of being that open and that free, and not trying to go, well, how do we write a pop hit? Because the song that we wrote with expected no audience, or the album that we expected no audience, got in the top 40 and was our big. It launched our whole career, so it gave that comfortable ground. It wasn't years and years of slogging, and then we figured out how to write a pop hit. It was like, here's this weird shit that we've written, and it somehow connected. But it's also, I mean, it's also been response. It's also meant that I've had to make sure I'm really conscious and vigilant as an artist, as someone on social media, because it was in the dawn of social media blowing up as well and accessibility. So to have a song like Magician's Assistant, which admittedly it's an album track, but it was one that, if you connect to it, you connect to it probably in a pretty deep and heavy
way.
So it meant that I've always been really vigilant on my socials, on my DMs, on my emails and things like that. Because I hear from people who are going through some tough times and have done from like that start point to like the last week or two. I'll still have people that are like, hit me up about that song or about these heavy things. And it's a weird one. It's important to be vigilant on it, but it's also... I've known from day one it's important to be clear. I'm just some twat with a microphone. I can't actually help. Yeah, exactly. I can't actually solve the problems here. There are experts. There are people like Samaritans and Calm and all people who I've worked with for years. So that's always been my thing, to keep an eye on being there for people if they need me, but equally making it clear I'm not the guy for you to depend on. Because, although how social media is and how albums are, we don't know each other.
No.
And it might seem like that on socials. It's really weird. I had Johan Harry on my podcast recently.
Right.
And he's done a lot of studying into depression, into mental health, and into the possible causes and solutions. And when we were discussing it, we kind of had a breakthrough, because he highlighted that one of the known main causes of mental health issues is loneliness.
Yeah, right.
And one of the biggest problems with addressing mental health is awareness, is knowing that you need help, knowing that you're going through something. And it was kind of in the podcast that I put forward, I think social media, everyone talks about how it's damaging us, because it is.
Yeah,
I think it's damaging us more than we realise, because social media has isolated us far more than ever before, but we've got access to more people than ever before. So I think it's given us loneliness, but hiding it. It's not making us aware of it. So we're not realising how lonely we are.
No.
We can go weeks without actually talking to our mates properly.
Yeah.
But because we're on Facebook and we're looking, we feel we're having that connection, and we're not. And
this is it.
I think that's really damaging, and I think that's why... I don't know if there's a rise in mental health issues. I hope that it's just there's a rise in awareness and a rise in being able to talk about it. But I think social media is having a potentially negative impact on that, because regardless of connection to celebrities or people who've written songs, connection to our mates, we might not be checking in as much as we
would. So true.
And when we do meet up, we're not going to be as, oh, what have you been up to? Because you know what they've shared.
Yes.
And that's important as well. All we really know is what people are putting out there. There's so much below the surface that we don't know. But I think, I think it gives us a false sense of security, a false sense of socialising.
Oh, God, absolutely.
That isn't real.
Yes.
And I think that can be really damaging and, a worrying thing in this day and age.
Well, I've got, I mean, I've got two sons. They're 21 and 27.
Yeah.
And what gave me hope is that they're actually coming away from social media. Yeah. A lot of young people are going, yeah, it's all bollocks. It's all bullshit. We need to be going out. And so now I've noticed this in comedy clubs. Comedy clubs are getting busier again. Going to see bands. A lot of people are going to see bands now. I know a lot of, they say, you know, bands are going on tour because they can't make any money from recorded stuff. Yeah. But more people are going to see bands.
Completely.
And that gives me hope. Because, like, you know, social media is, it's like with Jade, like Jade and I have, we've had arguments. I'm like, we've just been on this all day, but we've been sat with each other.
What are we doing? I really get annoyed because I can't remember if I've ranted about this anywhere else, but I'll go into
that's
it
all
now.
Right, that's all
it's,
right.
It's always tough with podcasts and stuff because it's like, I'm not the most social person, so either I've ranted about it on a recorded podcast, or me and Whiffin have been moaning on the train somewhere. Other than that, I don't know which conversations are recorded and which aren't. But I saw a thing a while ago, and it was just a little clickbait thing, and it was saying like ways to tell if your partner's cheating on you, and one of the main ones was if their phone's always face down.
Yeah.
Now, when I'm with my a missus, I make a conscious effort to have my phone face down or in my pocket because I want to be paying her attention. It's the same with when I'm with my old man. It's like if I'm going around with dads, I only see him once a week or so for an hour or two at a time. I'll try and have my phone face down. Yeah. Any situation where it's different, like I always know if I'm watching sports or something like that, it's good to be looking at what Twitter's saying and stuff like that. So I'll be with mates, but all of us like, oh, have you seen what this person posted? Oh shit. But in general, I'll try and do that now. And it's sad that that kind of thing is then seen as
cheating,
or is now put as, oh, you've got something to add. I was talking to my brother about it, and he was saying he had his phone down in the pub the other day, and they were like, oh, you're keeping a secret from us. It's like, No, I'm with other humans.
Yeah.
I want to interact. And I know, again, I'm addicted to this thing that's in my pocket. I know that if it starts bleeping, I'll be distracted, whoever I'm with. So I'd rather have it face down or in my pocket so that I can, actually engage and share that moment and share time.
Last night, we did a gig, and then afterwards we were sat round. It was Jade, myself, Elf Lyons, and Ollie Ryzen, who do the gig. And we sit there, and I can feel my phone buzzing in my pocket.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and I got excited. I'm like, that's going to give me something to look at later on.
Yeah,
and
that's
ridiculous.
Yeah. It's mad.
Absolutely
isn't it?
Ridiculous. We are just slaves to it. And
we really are.
Yeah, I've had times where I've gone out and I've forgotten my phone.
Yeah.
And I've left it on the side, and I'm like, I don't even care.
Yeah.
I'm out, and I'm like, there's a moment where I go, shit. I'm like, well, I'm meeting the people I'm meeting. I thought that's already dealt with. I don't need it for anything else. Yeah. I'll catch up with him later.
Does it matter?
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
It's a mad one. I completely agree. I think it's a weird thing that we're addicted to, and we're all old enough to remember how it was before that. I was listening to the Being Nobody podcast recently, which is a girl called Alex Sinwise, and she was... she's kind of writing her memoirs and using a podcast to remember everything and log it and then write from that. And she was talking about how she'd go and I'd heard it recently, as I was talking to my mate last night about it. We'd go and knock for a mate. We probably wouldn't ring ahead because we didn't want to speak to their parents.
Exactly.
We'd knock for a mate. If they're in, we'd go and walk up the park and see if anyone was there. They weren't, we'd walk onto the shops and see if anyone's there. And if they weren't, we'd walk onto the wreck. And then we'd just do a circle until we bump into someone. And my mate, I was talking to my mate Stu about it last night, and he was like, yeah, we'll go over the park. If it's the daylight, we'll have a look around and see if anyone's there. If it's dark, we'd shout, oi, oi. And if anyone shouted, oi, oi, back, we'd know they're there. And I was like, that's so good. That's so much better. Like, it's so easy to forget those things. But that's what it'd be. It'd be dark. You just go and literally shout something, see if anyone's there. All right, they're over in the corner of the park.
That's exactly what we used to do.
And it was amazing. Yeah. It's so mad to think now that you'd walk round for an hour or so to see if anyone's about. Imagine that now. If you arrange to meet and they're 5 minutes late, you're like, well, I may as well go home. Yeah. Let's cancel this. They're not here. It's like, but then you would just stroll about.
Yeah, and there was always someone around.
Yeah.
And it,
You just try and you'd just look for people. You'd go and find people. Imagine that now. Imagine going anywhere on the off chance that you're just going to have to come home again. That's unimaginable. No one would take that risk.
What a waste of time.
Unless I know my friends are there. I am not going. I'm not leaving the house. It's mad to think of, right?
Mate. I remember, like, you know, the telephone boxes. And we,
This
is only very recently. This is like year 2000. I didn't even have a mobile phone then. I was like one of the last people. So I didn't see the point of having it. And there was a girl that I really liked. And then I was trying to get hold of her and then trying to find... I was driving around trying to find a phone box with me 20p and trying to let her go, she's not in.
Around that exact time, I was seeing a girl and she'd just got her first, she'd got her own flat. She'd fallen out of her parents. It was all a bit rushed. We'd given a council flat. She didn't have a phone in there and I only had my home phone at my mum's. So each night, I'd ring the phone box, which was down the road at 7 o'clock and she'd generally try and be there because again she didn't have 20p to ring me, she might drop call me and then I'd ring back, but in general I'd just be like, oh, I'll ring the phone box at 7 o'clock and if she doesn't answer it's like, oh, I'll try again tomorrow. It's literally like there's no other way of chasing up on that unless I drive round there think alright.
And now if you don't reply, like, I get this all the time with what I do, get emailed and if I haven't replied straight away, you get chased. And
emails are the one I'm almost stubborn on them. I'll look at an email and I think I could reply now, but I need them to know that I don't reply immediately. I might not reply immediately. A text, I understand. If I've read a text, I can respond quick, But emails, I still think you shouldn't be chasing up earlier than a couple of days. A couple of days is fine. Yeah. If it's been a couple of days, hit me up again.
That's it.
I'm busy, but I might not have got around to it. But other than that...
Because when you got letters, you didn't reply with a letter straight away.
No, exactly. You'd let it fester. It's sitting on your doorstep for ages before you've even opened it.
You're like, oh, I know what that is. I can't open that.
I can't get around to that.
But it's nice that, like you said at the beginning, it's nice that you recognise that a lot of men use a lot of things, like use certain things to open themselves up and they feel comfortable putting it in that space.
Yeah.
That a lot of us haven't got that now. Like we haven't got the football, we haven't got, you've got the wrestling.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, what I have with a lot of friends is music.
Yeah.
It's all because I collect vinyl. So there's a lot of that now.
It's finding the right thing, right? It's weird. The first time I came around here and chatted with Jade in your living room. I was saying that this area is important to me. It means a lot. Like I went to school up the road, to this day, a couple of times a week, particularly if I've got reading. So I'm trying to read a lot more at the moment. I struggle to read at home. And there's a point up the road here that I come and I walk along a bit, listen to a podcast. I'll sit down and read.
Yeah.
I walk a bit, I'll sit down and read. And it's really good for my mental health because it's getting me out of the house. It's getting me reading. While I'm reading, I'm regularly interrupted by dogs. Love dogs. So it's my spot where I'm like, where they all walk. So it's like, I know where it is. So I'm always going to have some interruptions. And it's weird because I've been doing that for a while and I hit a mate of mine up and he was like, are you about? And I was like, not really. Again, I'm not a very social person. No. So my default is always, I am always busy as well. I'm busy. And he was like, he sent a message and he said he's going through some stuff. And I had a think and I was like, exactly that. I was like, well, we're not pub blokes anymore.
No.
Me and him aren't going to want to go and sit and have a pint. And particularly in our areas.
Like,
you know where I'm from and all that kind of
thing. That's it. Yes.
It's not the nicest of pubs. It's a bit rough. So I said to him, do you want to... I'll pick you up and we'll go for a walk.
Yeah.
Which seems really odd to grown men. Man. And we went down... I parked up at Lee Station... Oh, no, at Chalkwell Station. And we walked from Chalkwell pretty much all the way into Southend, I think. Brilliant. And walked back again. And we just talked. And it was... It was amazing. We're walking along, so we didn't have the pressure of looking each other in the eye and having a deep conversation.
That's
of what's going on, what's the trouble. It meant that we could walk along, have a look out at the sea, have a look out at the sky, get distracted by dogs not feel anyone's listening in because we're not at a table in a pub.
No,
just walking along, and it was great. And we had a real, like, literally just met up and we walked for about an hour to 2 hours. Brilliant. And then I dropped him home.
Amazing.
but it wouldn't have happened otherwise. And in a pub, it would have been awkward. So it was that thing that I think a lot of my mates, or even me at a time, I wouldn't have been comfortable suggesting something like that.
No.
But it's finding the thing that you're comfortable with, rather than saying, oh no, let's leave it, because you don't want to sit in the pub. You don't want to do that. Go, well, what do you want to do? Then let's make that work.
Well, Marcus Bourbon and I did that.
Yeah.
Another comic lives around the corner, and he's got a dog.
Yeah.
He just texted me just now, actually, just saying, like, you ran later. And we walked the dog.
Yeah.
And we, exactly where you've just said.
We walk
all the way up, walk all the way back, and then we talk about everything. We talk about shit I've got going on, and then shit he's got going on, and moaning about people in the industry, and, you know, just. Yeah. And he's getting it all out. He's getting it all out, and then we take the piss out of each other. And but it's a wonderful time.
It's really just important, to walk along. It?
And again, it's funny you say that about not looking at each other. Because there's Michael Smiley, you know, the Irish actor.
Yeah, I love
comedian.
Smiley.
Oh, mate, he's my absolute hero. I love him. And I remember having some trouble with my youngest son. And I said, I don't know how to talk to him. I said, every time I see my youngest son, we just clash. And we just want to throttle each other. He said, why don't you take him out? Why don't you take him out and go fishing? Or go to a pond and throw stones in it.
Yeah.
Anyway, and he said that, because you're just doing something else that will take your mind off it. And
it's not the pressure of being eye to eye, face to face. We've got a big discussion to have.
Exactly. And it worked.
Yeah.
It absolutely worked. We went out, he lives in Gravesend in Kent. So I picked him up, and it was frosty as it was in, you know, it was back then. You're in the car. He's giving me two words every fucking 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
So then we got some sausage and chips, and we just sat by the river. We're eating chips, we're throwing them at the seagulls, and it was amazing.
Yeah,
and it worked.
It's perfect.
And I think that's if men can recognise that, you don't have to go to the pub, you don't have to go and do a manly sort of thing.
That's it. There's so many things that are set down. That's where it happens. A pub is either where you're being lads or you're having a serious chat or whatever else. It's like so much of society is moving away from pubs and that now, and I think that's a good thing. I hardly a drink at all these days.
Yeah,
I'm not against.
No.
A drinking, but again, I like that there's it no longer has to be the default. Again, growing up in these areas, it's the default.
Yeah, that's all.
You're not
is.
Drinking because you like a drink, you're drinking because that's what you do. It's the weekend.
Yeah,
why wouldn't you be drinking? So I like that those things are changing, but it potentially removes an arena of conversation. And it's nice to kind of go, well, oh, what are the other ones? Where can we go? As said, go and sit by a lake. I'm a big fan of being near water.
Water for me, the same.
For thinking or reading or whatever else. Me and my old sound man, James, on all of our tours, you tour all Europe and America and all this, and you never get to go and see anything.
Yes.
So we made a point after a while of going, well, we've toured loads, like, done a few years of touring, and all we see is hotel rooms. So every city we'd get to, me and James would find at least an hour to go and find some water.
Nice.
And it'd either be a river, the beach, a lake, a reservoir, anything. Just find the water and it'll be nice. And we'd do that in every city all around Europe. And it made the tour, because it meant you're walking around. And again, you are having those moments of chatting that aren't in the back of a tour van where everyone's taking the piss and having banter and whatever else. It's like, we'll just go for a stroll and have a chat. And it really,
It keeps
you sane in those situations.
Oh, God, yeah. I heartily recommend going and sitting by any body of water.
Completely.
I mean, this is why I live in here, right? I get up in the morning and you're like, this is incredible.
Yeah.
You know, I did a double act with a guy called Eddie a couple of years ago, and we'd taken it to Australia. We did Melbourne. It wasn't quite connecting. We hadn't had a lot of chance to get together beforehand.
Yeah.
So we didn't know what we were doing, and it wasn't really working, and we were getting really annoyed and frustrated. And then we went from there to New Zealand, and I remember we got to Auckland. I'd never been there before, and we were wandering down to the water's edge, and we were just sat there, and we're like, right, we've really got to make this work, man. And we just sat on this bench, and it just came flooding out. We're like, why don't we do this? Oh, fuck yeah, why don't we do that? And we absolutely smashed it in New Zealand.
Amazing.
And it was all because we sat by the water.
Yeah.
Sit by some water, man.
It's such a weird one. I think it makes such a difference. There's something so calming about it.
It's nuts, isn't it?
Yeah.
And when you think about it, like I've said this before, when you really look out, like all these arguments about borders and people from afar and all this, if you drained all the water out, it's all the same bit of land. That is literally just a thing that's in between us. But there's just something romantic about it and calming, and I fucking love it.
No, I couldn't agree more. It's so nice, and it's so, I think we're lucky. It's one of the good things about being this weird little island that we are, is that you're never too far from some water.
Exactly, man.
You're always going to be able to find something, and that's a
yeah,
that's
not a too far
thing.
Away.
No, yeah.
What about growing up? Because you started poetry,
yeah,
spoken word,
yeah.
Now, I didn't know a lot about now. Growing up, if you said the word poet or poem,
yeah,
straight away I'd shut down. Ah, no, that's bollocks.
Mate, same.
Yeah,
100%.
Growing up in your area,
yeah. We did a festival at Chalkwell Park. And me and Dan Lasak, and we were one of the headliners, and we had another festival booked that day. So we did two festivals in one day. But the reason we accepted it was I was like, I need to get on a stage within shouting distance of my old school. Because at that school, my English teacher warned my mate Martin from hanging out with me and Mark. She said he could do better. like in general, it wasn't. And I wanted to get out there and go, I've had books published and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a poet, supposedly.
That's it.
It's like, there you go, Mrs. Taylor. But yeah, for me, it was a weird one. I got into poetry as a necessity. I was into rap, and living in these areas, there's not an abundance of Dr. Dre's or anyone to make beats for you. And it was people like, I guess, say Francis Saul Williams, KRS-One, and then Gil Scott-Heron and stuff like that made me kind of aware of spoken word. And that excited me because I was like, oh, that's something I can do off my own back. I don't need to rely on anyone else. And that kicked it all off. I then got into loads of great poets. But it's always an awkward one. I always have people online think I'm far more well-read, better educated than I am and shit like that. It's like, no, that one thing you've heard of me, I spent ages on that. I'm not generally that clever and that articulate. It's like, I just spent a lot of time crafting it.
But a lot of the lyrics on Angles,
yeah.
When I first heard it, it made me go, oh, fuck yeah, of course. Like, what is it, the one, Thou Shalt Not. That made me realise, like, fuck yeah, of course. Stake a Claim.
Yeah.
Stake a Claim was a song that, mate, when you were going, the government, accountable to us, the people, not the other, and I was like, holy shit, of course they are.
It was a mad one, that, because that was I originally wrote that for a French dance act. Like, we'd done some gigs in France, and this big dance act, I can't even remember their name, had been like, we'd like you to do some lyrics on a track.
Yeah, wasn't Le Rhythm Digitalis, wasn't it?
No, I can't remember the name of it, but I sent them that, and it was far too wordy and intense. And I've had that a few times. Years ago, a Liam Howlett from The Prodigy hit me up to write some stuff for them.
Yeah.
And at that point, again, I was green, I was ignorant. Right, I didn't know how to. Right. So I just wrote Scroobius Pip lyrics.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is great, but we can't put that on a Prodigy song. You know, we generally have like 8 or 9 lyrics a song.
Yeah.
You've just written this hugely dense thing. But I wrote that for this French band because France had blown me away as a people in standing up against the government. Like, it was around that time France or Paris specifically had tried to bring in clamping.
Yeah, right.
And the French as a people just decided, no, we're not having that. As they just put glue in all the locks. So every clamp had to be destroyed.
Yeah.
And they were like, all right, let's not bother with clamping then. So rather than tax people this stupid for parking all this kind of thing and claim their cars, it's like, no, we're not having that.
No,
and
I love
that they had, and when they do a strike, like our protests in England, and it's a tough one at the moment because there's a lot of stuff to protest, and I never want to speak out against it because it's activism, but a million people all marching where they've been told it's okay to march by the people they're protesting against blows my mind a little bit.
It's like, you have to put in a form.
It's all right if we march here. Yeah, that won't cause any problems. Perfect. So why are we doing this again?
Yeah, it's so British.
Whereas in France, when they had like the truckers, they just blocked all the routes and no cars could move for days because they were protesting their import-export tax and stuff like that. And they genuinely seemed to go, no, if we're not happy with something, then we will bring this country to a standstill.
Whereas
England seems to go, if we're not happy, we will make sure it's okay to protest here, and then we will really post some hilarious placards on social media. And that'll really teach them. It's mad. But again, it's a weird one because I don't like to talk out against it because, as I said, anything that's making a stand is better than just doing a tweet about it or whatever else. But it's a tough one because that was it's weird because France-inspired take a claim, and then it started to get used in protests in the UK. Yeah, like, yeah. I've seen videos of protests where people are playing Stake a Claim and everyone's chanting along. Yeah. That blows my mind. It's to be banger. Part of that kind of that movement is, yeah.
Yeah, but that's why exciting. when you're talking, when you say about, you know, your lyric, and, you know, people assume that you're more well-read than you are, because of that. It's because with that lyric, you absolutely nailed it. And it made me, as a consumer of music, realise, I was like, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's me going along with that. You know, oh, well, the government, they must be right. Yeah. You go, no, you voted for them.
They work for us.
Yeah, yeah.
They're our employees, essentially. Yeah, they represent us. It's not the other way around. But yeah, it's mad.
It was lyrics like that. And
wicked.
Yeah, it really spoke to me. Because you have these thoughts, but you're not sure if they're right, so you're scared to voice them.
Yeah.
And it's only when someone like you that has on that sort of platform,
yeah,
that makes you realise that you're not alone.
It comes back round to the open discussion of mental health stuff in general as well. The thing I've found on my podcast, like, I often get asked if I'll do a mental health special, and the reason I haven't is because it comes up so regularly anyway. Because it's not special; it's part of everyone's life. It's so regular.
Yeah, everyone's talking.
And
now,
if you look at the stats on mental health, people will be all nervous to talk about it because they don't want to be a burden on their mates. They don't want to be, I don't want to be adding pressure on you or being a downer. The stats kind of say there's so many people struggling that odds on, if you speak to a mate about it, they're going to be relieved because they're going through something similar or have gone through something similar. Imagine in that moment where you're struggling, imagine if one of your mates, how much of a relief it would be, rather than a burden, how much of a relief it would be if one of your mates said, I'm struggling a bit at the moment, so you could then go, oh fuck, I've been struggling and I couldn't say anything. So I think that's really important and really interesting, is realising that, again, the fact that you heard one of my songs, I thought, oh, someone else thinks like that. There's loads of us all think about these things. It's just someone taking that leap to say it, rather than it be a burden, it can be a benefit. It can help your mates. Yeah. It can help everyone else have that chance to go, you know what? I'm struggling too. This is rough.
Moving to Essex as well, I've found, has been incredible. And I know, because Essex gets a bad rap, and I've said this before, I know. You know, I guess this, it was always synonymous with the Essex oi and the jazz funk. So you had the Cortinas and you had the Capris and the White Sox and all that. Yeah. All the lads.
Yeah.
But since we've moved here and meeting interesting people, like meeting Stu Whiffin, and then that has opened the doors to meeting all these other incredible people.
Yeah.
It's the best thing I ever did, just coming out of London, which now I see it as quite insular. Coming out and go, fuck, the world isn't about London. London's fucked, to be honest.
Yeah.
In my, you know, there's still some good stuff going on, but at the moment it's a building site and it's all fucked. Yeah. But coming out, you go, oh no, there's interesting people here.
And
I see Essex in a completely different light now.
Yeah.
And meeting someone like 76.
Yeah.
And I haven't even met him yet.
Yeah.
But we've spoken online. He's been to see Jade's shows.
Yeah.
With his missus. And now I got a message from him the other day going, how you doing? Are you all right? I'm just seeing if you're all right.
Yeah.
I'm like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm cool, man. How are you? And we had this chat.
It's tough, isn't it? Yeah.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Yeah. That kind of, yeah. And again, it's a mad one because I kind of had a similar, the first time I started touring, that you kind of realise how big the UK is, yeah, and how varied it is and how beautiful it is and how, yeah, it's, man, not just all about that bit. Again, growing up in Essex, you're almost more blind to the wonders of Essex because the focus is you're near enough to London.
Of course.
So you need to get in there. What's going on in,
yes,
London?
Yes.
What's going on over there? Like, you're not looking around and going, oh, it's all right here. You're going, what's that over there?
Yeah, why, this golden jewels.
Yeah, what they're building. Yeah. What's that? And that was mad touring because you get to go about and go, again, you think of the grim north. And then you go up there and there's rolling hills and
it's beautiful,
and huge lakes and some of the most beautiful stuff you'd see anywhere in the world. You're like, all right, I'd always thought of Manchester. Like, Manchester's the best example for me because you've got this amazing city.
That's right.
But then literally 20 minutes drive and you're in valleys.
Yeah.
It's like, that's heavenly. I love Manchester. Yeah, it's mad. Yeah. From the south, you're like, oh, Manchester and Liverpool, all that. It's all grey and negative. Yeah, all that. It's like, nah.
Well, mine was a bit different. With Manchester, it was a bit different because when I came of age, Manchester was the centre of the universe with all the music and everything.
Of course.
So we'd talk about like these. We'd fantasise about getting enough money together, getting in the car, go to the Hacienda.
I'm glad
I didn't. Now I hear about what we used to go down.
Yeah.
But we used to, so Manchester became this incredible like palace. I was like Superman's house. You know, it was like, I want to go and see it.
Yeah.
And now doing comedy, I've been there and I love it. It's one of my favourite cities. And that's one of the things, doing what I'm doing, like you did, you going on tour.
Yeah.
And you toured around in a, didn't you tour around in a Toyota or something?
I did.
When you first.
My first tours were all, I bought a 1987 Toyota Space Cruiser, and just lived in it for a bit and just toured about, just going from place to place with Chris from Hardcore Listing as well.
Of course, because your mate's from
From way back. So me and him just got in his van. It's, he'd just started Redshift, which is him and Stu's company now, but it was just his at the time. And he was like, I want to tour about and try and find shops to sell my caps in and just have a look at what's going on. And I was like, I'm doing music. So we shared the double bed of my Toyota Space Cruiser back seats. And we just toured about and knocked about, just going and looking everywhere. And it was, again, there's some, looking back, there's some clear mental health stuff going on there. Because the fact is, I performed in pretty much every major city in the UK before I ever performed locally.
Yeah, right.
Or in London. And it was, because I could go up there and be Scroobius as Pip.
Yeah,
I didn't have to worry.
Like, of course,
I've never got the whole local band thing because the most cringy, particularly starting off, the most horrible thing I could imagine was my mates all standing there and watching me do my thing. It's like, just judging, God, I've been so embarrassed and so stupid. Because again,
I suppose with what you're doing as well is quite personal. Your lyrics are quite personal. Yeah. So to stand in front of people that know you, feel quite exposed.
And it's weird. Anytime you hear, particularly with spoken word and rap, and at that point there wasn't a lot of spoken word and rap in my accent.
No.
So the fact that I'm just speaking in the voice I speak in, that's going to be weird to my mates because it's like, what's going on? Why is this over a beat? And why does he rhyme all of a sudden? Whereas if you've never heard it before, it's this, you're hearing it like that for the first time.
Yes,
if that makes sense.
Yes.
And there was a massive fake it until you make it thing. My theory, thought out theory, was I'd learned all my stuff, so I knew I was tight live. I always wore a suit and a trucker cap and had a big beard, I know I had a look. And I'd spent the last of my money on making my album and printing a proper looking CD that had a barcode on the back that you scanned it didn't do a thing, but it was just it all looked legit. And that meant that if I'm up north, they're going to assume I must be massive down south.
Bollocks,
I must be a big deal, but I hadn't gigged anywhere. So, but by the time I came back south, I'd built up a following on MySpace and stuff like that because of all the stuff I'd been doing in these other places who assumed I was established.
Wow.
And it was like, no. And then all of a sudden, it became its own reality. The kind of, the fake it till you make it was literally the thing. I was suddenly like, All right, I have got a following now, and I am reasonably successful at this stage and stuff like that. So yeah.
And did you? I mean, have you always been confident?
No, like? No, not at all. I'm the kid in school with a stutter. That's literally the first victim. Like, they're called in the register, and you can't speak. And you're starting at school. Everyone, quite rightfully, is looking for someone to bully, and that sounds horrible. But you don't want to be the one being bullied.
Of course not.
So you need someone else to be a victim. And if the first thing they do is call a register, and the first thing I can't do is speak, then easily I'm that guy.
Go on.
It was the thing for me that really helped. A problem I've always had. I get told I'm brave and all sorts of things for doing all these different things with a stutter. I just get overexcited and forget I've got a stutter. So I'll commit to shit and then go, oh fuck.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And
shit.
The key to the performing thing, and again, I have to credit Chris from Hardcore Listening for this. Oh, we'd plan the tour. We're gonna knock about, and actually, as we were setting off, there was a DJ Shadow album launch in London.
Right.
So I did a street gig in London before we went north, and I was like, we'll go there. I've got my amp, I've got my mic, I'll do a little performance because there'll be a crowd.
Yeah.
And we get there, and suddenly I realise what I've got to do.
Yeah.
So I've got to actually do this. I've been planning, I've been so caught up in the writing of it, the getting tight, not thought at all about the actual thing that I was about to have to do. And it's because Chris was there, kind of going, well, go on then.
Yeah.
You know, we're here now. We've got booked, to do it. We've quit our jobs. We're going on the road. It's like, go on,
this
in.
Is it.
It starts here. Yeah. If you don't do this, then what are we going to do?
Yeah.
You know, we've got the next month
Holy
or two.
Shit.
So it literally, I think potentially if I was on my own, it might not have happened because I could have just walked away.
Of course.
I could have just gone, I'll try another one later.
But
and again,
to,
I'm
mate.
Sure I would have found one that I felt comfortable and it would have worked. Yeah. But it was great that first one, I didn't have the option to walk away.
No.
I used to quote at the time, and it's the reason I quit my job and everything. There was a quote, I'm sure I heard it off Seinfeld or someone, but it just said, if you've got something to fall back on, then you're going to fall back.
True.
And at the time, I liked that. It's like, I'd quit everything. I was like, it had to be a success.
Yeah.
I had no choice. I was living in my mum's house.
Right.
I'd quit my job. I had nothing else. So it had to work. I didn't have an option. It wasn't, we'll give it a try and then forget it. It's like, no, it needs to work. There's not...
Well, that's like what I do. I'm 47... There is no going back now. Yeah. I have to make this work.
It's got to work.
Yeah. But what this
and
is with your stutter as well.
Yeah.
Doesn't come out when you're doing the lyrics.
And that's what's quite nice. It's been really weird. I was thinking about this literally as I was driving yesterday. It's been weird that my stutter has started to become part of my identity in the last few years.
Because of the podcast,
and because of a few charity things I've done with the British Stammering Association, who are amazing. But it's a weird one, because I don't like... The example I was thinking, and again, this is all going on in my head, is I remember one year on Big Brother, and there was a lad, and it was like, his identity was, he's the gay lad.
Right.
And I've never liked that. Not gays,
gays. Yeah.
but your identity is one thing.
Yeah, that's what defines you.
And it's like, I know so many amazing gay men and women and all sorts of, but that's not what they're defined by. That's just part of them. That's another part. Of, you're never on there as the straight lad.
No.
So why would you be on there as the gay lad? It never made sense to me. And I was thinking, this is like, I don't want to be the stutter lad. And it's only in recent years I've had a few people, and it's always positive, doing a tweet saying like, yeah, and he's done all this even though he's got a stutter and stuff like that. And I was like, fuck off, I don't give a shit.
That's irrelevant.
I don't, again, it's weird because I never like to shy away from it. I think it's important to talk openly about mental health, about speech impediments, all that kind of thing. But it's been the first time in this last year or so that I started to go, oh, I don't want that to be the thing that's the defining point. And that's what's cool, that I had 10 years of a music career with people not knowing I've got a stutter. I never hid it, but just people didn't know because... It comes and goes, and in the songs, it's never there. It's a similar thing. Whereas you were saying about throwing stones in the sea or whatever, you've got something distracting you. I think that's if you've got a beat or whatever, you're flowing through. It's when you've not got that I think the stutter can creep in more and stuff like that. It's a weird one, I guess. It was starting the podcast and doing the XFM radio show that people started to go, oh.
Yeah.
I've been listening to you for 10 years. I didn't know you had.
Well, that's it. I had no clue. I had no clue. until meeting Stu and meeting Chris, meeting all you guys, and then getting more in, listening to you doing stuff that wasn't musical, and going, holy shit, wow, okay, so it's a new thing, and it's like, because Scroobius Pip was this character, this, you know, he's like this massive lyrics guy, and he's got a stutter, and you go, wow, man. I remember years ago when I was a kid, I saw a programme about Jan and Dean, and Jan, I don't know if you ever know about that. They were they were sort of like the Beach Boys era, early 60s. They were that same sort of surf pop stuff, very similar to the Beach Boys. And Jan Berry was in a car crash, and it really damaged him. So, he had his brain damaged, and so his speech was very fucked. But then when he'd sing like a bird, and he didn't even, and so like you say, it's that having something to focus on.
It's amazing. I love, again, the reason I'm always open talking about it, I said it's only been in the last year or so that it started to annoy me a little bit. I'm like, I don't want that to be the, the main thing.
Funny, when you were coming over, I'm like, because I make notes in my book, and I'm like, I was in my head, I'm like, I'm not going to bring it up. You bring it up, that's fine.
But again, I do find it all fascinating. Like, I did a video about it online, because I had Jess Tom on my podcast, Tourette's Hero, who's a stand-up and an actress who's got Tourette's.
Wow.
And it was a really important podcast for me, because I was like, that's been listened to by 50 or 60,000 people, and it's a conversation between someone with a stutter and someone with Tourette's. It's like, and it's over an hour. It's like, that's I mean, it's probably, it would have been half hour if we didn't have fucked up heads, but it's kind of, it's one of them, it felt really important, but it made me feel a bit bad, because she knew so much about it. She knew about the neurological sides of things, and I don't know that much about stutters, and I don't think anyone does, but I find it fascinating. And the thing I did a YouTube video about, because again, I just think it blows my mind, even though it's my mind, it blows my mind. The example I always use is, there's a comedian called Dylan Moran.
Yes.
Always stutter on his name. I can't say Dylan Moran without stuttering. And then I got taught a technique by a bassist in a band who had a stutter, of tapping out syllables on your leg. And if I do that, I can say Dylan Moran.
Oh, yeah.
Dylan Moran. If I don't do that, it's I get stuck with it. I can't help it. And that's mind-blowing. Again, it's clear that that's a distraction, right? Yeah, it's finding you're doing something rhythmical or doing something else that is getting you past that bit that staggers you.
There's a guy called Noel Faulkner.
Right.
He's a comedy. He used to run the Comedy Caf, or own the Comedy Caf, in East London. And he was one of the first people I ever met in comedy. He gave me my first gigs. I mean, I owe him so much. Yeah. But he had Tourette's, but he had the twitching one.
Right,
So you'd be talking to him. I'd never met anyone like that before in my life. Because any sort of about Tourette's, anything I knew about Tourette's was from John's Not Mad, the documentary. And then, so I met Noel, and Noel was doing all this, and I was like, holy shit. And then he did a show called Shake, Rattle and Noel, talking about his life, how he used to be a drug dealer, properly like bringing it in and out of the countries, and because no one in a million years would think he'd be the one. He wore Cuban heels as well, so he'd be sitting just...
So it's properly
owning it.
Kaiser Soze.
Exactly.
It's proper Usual Suspects. He's that he's the guy.
Never in a million years. No one would expect.
Yeah, exactly.
Didn't see it coming.
I love it.
And I remember talking to him one day about it, and he just said he just had this moment, because he's quite a character, Noel, and he's always on, and he's always sharp, and he's always, but he's very honest. He hasn't, because of his condition, he hasn't got any time for fucking about.
Yeah.
And he just said one day, he goes, the only thing people don't realise, he goes, it's exhausting. He goes, I'm constantly on the move, and it just you know, I can't handle it sometimes.
It's one of the things I realised in recent years, and it's complete bro science or bro psychology that I've kind of figured out, but I think it's one of the reasons I do enjoy time on my own.
Yeah.
Because no matter how second nature it's become, or whenever I'm talking, I'm reining in my stutter.
Yeah,
I'm controlling it in some way. And no matter how comfortable I am stuttering still, there's something going on that's holding it in as best I can and making these adaptions and all that kind of thing. And when I'm on my own, I don't have to be doing that.
No.
And I think that's one of the reasons I enjoy my time on my own and relaxing, because it's, I get to just switch off. Not speaking. I'm not having... I had a new entertainment system put in my house a reason. The guy who installed it was like, oh, it's got Alexa on it and you can do it all via speech. Yeah. I turned it off within half an hour because I was like, I don't want to be talking when I'm on my own. This is, so I want to relax. I'm fucking arguing with Alexa because she can't understand my stutter. And I'm like, no, I'll just use the remote, mate. It's all good. I don't need to be talking when no one's here. This is my time off from that shit.
See, these are the things you don't think about.
Yeah.
Don't think about that at all. How did that... when you did was Taboo the first acting job you ever did?
No, I did. I had a mad first 2.5 years of acting.
Yeah,
because I did King Arthur, the Guy Ritchie film.
Right.
I was cut out of it, but
oh, nah.
But I loved it. I had a good 2 months of regularly being on set and being around some of the best actors, imaginable. So that was an amazing lesson. And then off the back of that, I got a show called The Bastard Executioner, which was on FX in America.
Okay.
And that came about because a Charlie Hunnam, who was in King Arthur, I'd impressed him on set, and he was out for dinner with Kurt Sutter, who wrote Sons of Anarchy and The Shield and all that. And he played him some of my music and was like, oh, this guy's all right. And Kurt DM'd me going, oh, would you like to do some music on my new TV show? And I said, no, I want to be in it.
Really?
I'm acting now, I ain't doing that music thing.
Yeah.
And he loved it, and we met up and I had to audition and everything still, but I got in that. And then off the back of that, I got in Taboo.
Wow.
And it was kind of, it was that weird, in the first 2.5 years, I had three films and 2 TV shows. And then in the last 18 months, I've had about 50 auditions and not nailed anything.
Right.
And I feel I've learnt as much in these 18 months as I did in the first 2 years on set. Man. And it's wicked. I love that shit. I think it's the whole acting thing. Yeah, I find it fascinating. It's the first time I've been excited about the future.
Yeah, right.
In a long time. I've always been I don't like thinking about the future because it seems exhausting.
I'm
37, I'm knackered already. I can't imagine another 37 years. It's like, oh, fuck off.
Dude, I've just spent time with my nan. My nan's been in hospital. Right. She's 90.
Yeah.
And just listen. And I remember, she was always active. She had a car. She was always here and everywhere.
Yeah.
And just seeing this crumpled little old lady.
Mate.
And you're just going, oh, shit, that's inevitable. It's going to happen. And so I don't think about the future because it'll drive me mad.
But that's what's been good now with acting because with rap, I'm realistic. I think there's a point of diminishing returns. Mm. Unless you're Jay-Z or one of the huge names, do you really want to go and see a 45-year-old rapper? maybe not. They're like, it's gonna be diminishing. And particularly as live, I always enjoyed that I come off stage drenched in sweat. I put on a proper show. I go into it. So I'd always kind of, there was always that thing hanging over you, thinking, oh, when's the peak?
Yeah.
And me and Dan Lesak had our third album, and it was our most commercially successful, our most critically acclaimed. And I kind of decided I wanted to call it a day then. And we did our last ever gig at Bestival, and there was like over 10,000 people. All knew it was our last gig, so all singing every word. And I was like, I want to go out on top. That's a fucking amazing way. No one, or you generally don't get to choose things. It might be I'm a bit of a control freak, but it's nice to go, it ends there. It ends at a peak. It ends at a high point.
But it's so good to have that control because most people would milk it. You go, oh, that was brilliant.
There's money in there as well. There's money and adoration. It's like, nah, it's good to be able to walk away from that. And acting is the reason. Like, the podcasting is great. I love doing the podcast. It's a life changer for me. But
we've had some phenomenal guests.
Yeah, it's been mad. But it's the acting that I sit there thinking, this is where I am artistically or talent-wise in 3 years. Imagine where I'm going to be in 6 years or in 10 years. Again, I've been lucky that in the first 3 years I've got to do Taboo and stuff like that and work with Stephen Graham and Tom Hardy and these amazing people who have taken me under their wing and things like that. It's like, it's mind-blowing people to get to learn from. But again, imagine 3 more years, and then imagine 3 more years after that. That suddenly gets exciting. Because I've quoted it a few times, but I saw a documentary called Old Man Crazy to Paint, and I think it's on iPlayer at the moment. I recommend it to absolutely anyone. It's about a Japanese artist called Hokusai, and he's the guy who did the big wave, the big famous wave. And on that, there's a couple of things. Hockney's on there, and he says that painting is an old man's game, because in theory you should always be improving.
Right.
It's a skill you can always get better on. There's not a fit that, other than actual, you know, arthritis or any of these other things, there's not a point of diminishing returns, and acting feels the same as that. But it's the kind of story of Hokusai is just amazing. He was hugely successful, and at about 60, I think it was, he was like one of the biggest artists in the world, and he decided he was shit. He didn't rate any of his work, and he was like, I've got a lot I need to improve. And he was like, by 70, I'm going to be, or less, I can't remember exact dates, but by 65, I'm going to be good. By 70, I'm going to be great. By 75, I'm going to be a master. And by 80, every brushstroke will be a work of art. And then he died at 75.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? And it's just beautiful to be at that point and already have that success and go, I need to get better.
Yeah.
I need to improve myself. All this is shit. Everyone's telling me it's great, but they're just they don't know.
No.
They know how much better this can be.
You know inside,
and to be striving for that still. And the beauty of never reaching it, I find that genuinely beautiful. It could be sad. I think it's beautiful. That meant he went out still reaching, still climbing, not out just chilling, going, I've done it, it's cool. And that's what excites me about acting. It feels like I'm so far off what I think I could be there.
Yeah.
And the journey just seems fucking exciting.
Well, mate, it was so good seeing you pop up in Taboo.
Mate,
I think I even tweeted you. I was like, mate, is there anything else? Because I don't watch a lot of television. I watch bits and bobs.
Yeah.
And then because I love Tom Hardy, so of course we were like, well, this looks interesting. And Jade and I got really into it, and we were like, well, let's get in. And then I remember sitting there going, that's fucking Scroobius Pip. She's like, what? I'm like, that's fucking Scroobius Pip. I'm fucking telling you now.
Yeah.
And then I'm showing her, and then that.
Mate.
So see you popping up in that.
And the amount I had to bite my tongue on it as well, because again, the first thing you assume is going to be just a little cameo.
Yeah.
And I know the character grows. There's more and more. I know I'm in the next series. It's a proper thing. I'm taking this seriously. But whenever you're new to an industry and you've got a profile anywhere else, people are going to assume it's a little cameo. And I was always like, people would be tweeting lovely stuff at any time. It's like, I loved your cameo. It'd be a little bit like, it's not a fucking cameo, mate. Is it? I mean, it's not a cameo. I'm a returning character. Builds. I kill that person.
That's it.
Come on.
But yeah, I didn't see it as a cameo. I just
because
I haven't heard about you and put anything out. I remember seeing you. And I think you must have been doing. I think I've heard you on another podcast. I think you were doing a spoken word thing in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
I remember walking past you, and I'm like, "That's fucking Scroobius Pip." And we sort of like looked at each other and carried on, because it's like, interesting dude, and then we carried on. So, I've always been aware of you. You've been aware, but I didn't know what you were doing. And seeing you in Taboo, it was like, here we go.
It's one of the great things about, or one of the weird, it can be a damaging thing about social media, is I remember talking to Kate Nash about this, because she kind of had a bit of a rough time, because she was smashing it in, she was about to be in Glow, she's doing all this amazing stuff. There was some shit article that was, remember these 90s or naughty stars, and she was in there, and it's like, but it makes you realise that. An example I always give is someone like Ed Sheeran, who again he came to my gigs back in the day. He's a lovely a lad, but he's huge. So say he's got 50 million followers on Instagram or Twitter or whatever it is, it's loads, but that means there's like 3, 4, 5, 6 billion people who aren't his followers. So no matter how big you are, there's always these people who aren't going to be aware. So you kind of, it's a good one to have as an example, because again, because of Thou Shalt going where it went, a lot of people only know that. So I'll do something for a TV show or something like that, and there'll be people like, fucking hell, is he still about? He's still doing stuff. I remember Thou Shalt. It's like, mate, that wasn't even the most successful period. But again, it's being able to step away from that and remember that, you're the lead in your life.
That's
you're
right.
Not the lead in anyone else's life. Everyone else is the lead in their lives. And that's what, quite rightfully, they've got to focus on. They shouldn't be aware of what I'm doing.
Well,
they've certainly not got a responsibility to be aware of what I'm doing. They could be following me on Facebook because of algorithms. They haven't seen a post of mine in 5 years, so they're not going to know I've got a podcast and all these different things. And that's fine. You can't get protective or defensive over that. It's easier said than done, but
of course,
yeah.
Well, Jade gets that because Jade's profile is going up and up.
Yeah,
and it's interesting to see someone moving up the ladder, where because you always see people up the ladder.
Yeah,
I've never seen it from behind the scenes before. The climb. It's fucking interesting, man. And then now and again there'll be a list. Some they'll put a list out, top 10, top 20 female comics, or there'll be something. And then Jay's not on it. And then for a moment she's like, oh, for fuck's sake, what's the
I'm
point?
Working really hard.
You go, that's it. You are. Don't worry about it. You're working really hard and you're still getting, you'll get to work, people want to work with you, and it's focus on that.
It's one of the things I like about the acting world is because there's not an immediate payoff, it makes you stop relying on that immediate recognition.
Of course,
so the fact is, Jade has done Good Omens.
Yes.
I reckon that's going to be one of the biggest shows in recent
years. Yeah, huge.
But she did it ages ago.
I know.
So it's now, you're slightly detached from it. Yeah. So when it comes out, it's a different thing. Whereas with, I had it with Live, if I release a song, you've got instant recognition. Or if you do a gig, you've got instant recognition. If you don't get that recognition, it hurts.
Yes.
But with acting, because it takes, your bit is done, and then everyone else has to work for months and months to do the rest of it, you become that bit more detached from it. And I think that's a positive thing for, again, for mental health as an artist, because you're not chasing that instant pat on the back for it, because you can't have it.
Because it's not there.
You can't have it. Yeah. It's not there. No one knows about it. Often you can't talk about it. That's what I love as well.
Oh, yeah.
You can't even be posting going, I'm on set with Tom Hardy. How mental is this? By the time people know about it, you're like, I remember that. That was a year ago.
Yeah, right.
I'm doing this now.
Do we need to edit that out, actually?
You're exactly.
On the second bit.
Yeah, no, it's fucking, I love stuff like that.
Yeah.
It stops that thing that we've made in society now through socials. It feels like I'm just hating on socials the whole time, but we've made this whole thing of instant gratification.
Yeah.
Here's a picture of me looking hot. I like it immediately.
That's it, yeah.
Here's a funny thing that I've said. Give me credit for it immediately. It's like, no, that's not what it needs to be.
No.
You know, if you look hot, then hopefully you've worked at that, you've been being healthy, you've been exercising, you're doing whatever you need to do. That should be a sustained and long-term thing. If you're not, then that's fine as well. But you know what I mean? It shouldn't be this, I need this instant recognition.
But like you said about that striving, like being as an actor, like you're saying about being an artist and being an actor, and you can always be better.
Yeah.
The same with what I do, comedy. I'll come off, I'll have a smashing gig, but I'll still be in my head going, that could be better, that could be in a different place. Oh, I've got to stop doing that material there. I hate that material now. It's never going to be finished.
Yeah.
Like albums, they've always said, they're never finished. Yeah. They're just.
And speaking about the climb as well, I think the margin of improvement is always greater on the climb. I think it's when comedians, musicians, whoever get successful, that they have to then have it in them to keep improving.
Yeah.
Because there's an easy option to just get comfortable.
Exactly, which we've seen. Cool. Yeah.
I'll relax now. I'm really big. I'm really successful. And you don't keep improving. So,
which we've seen a million times.
Yeah.
But I think that's the same with just life. It's not just people like ourselves doing, lucky enough to do what we're doing, but in life they seem to think it's a journey with an ending, and it isn't. I mean, there is an ending, and it's not very nice, but the life is just, it's just you're always going to be learning, you're always going to be moving forward, you're always
just
doing
improving,
something,
just improving in any way. And that's the thing that again is damaging with the media, and that is we seem to discredit the thousands of different ways you could be improving. You could be becoming a better and better butcher every day.
Yeah.
And that is worth easily as much as becoming a better and better singer, or better and better comedian, or better and better actor, or whatever else. You could, I mean, even more so, you could be becoming a better doctor, or a better, of these
anything,
things. It's like everything, any improvement. I was really lucky when I was growing up that my parents, despite most of the people in my school, the goal was to go and work in London, earn good money.
That's
you
right,
work
yeah.
in the city, you earn money. They were always kind of said to me, look, Just as long as you're happy,
yeah,
then that's cool. If you're working in a corner shop, as long as you're happy and you're working hard at it,
yeah,
and you're like the best at that corner shop.
That was the same with my parents, yeah.
Then that's fine, boss. And that's really important because, again, I think I don't mind a reality show every now and then and stuff like that, but it makes it that this is the most, being able to sing is the most important thing in the world. It's like, it's not.
No.
It's nice. It's another thing that's lovely, but
that's right.
It's not more important than, again, being. I was really good when I worked in HMV. I was really good when I worked in the kitchens of Pizza Hut. I was brilliant in there. I was fucking great in Pizza Hut. And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
It's good to take pride in that. Any job is more enjoyable. This sounds so simple and stupid, but any job is more enjoyable if you work hard at it.
That's right.
Because then it's not boring and you're not just coasting.
The amount of jobs I had when I'd be someone that had been there 20 years and you know, first day there, and like they say, our new broom sweep clean, and I would just get stuck in, like, no, we don't do that here.
Yeah,
and you'd just be bored.
Yeah,
just be stood there bored.
So like, I have to be
stuck
here.
In. Yeah,
that was always my argument in retail, which is where I met 76.
Yeah, right.
So me and him worked in HMV.
Yeah,
and then when he moved to HMV Beckton, when he was leaving, I moved in there and took over one of the team leader spots, things like that. And his outlook was exactly the same. He was like, look, we have to be here for these hours.
Yeah.
They go a lot quicker if you get loads done.
If you get work stuff really done. Hard.
And it's more enjoyable because you're getting achievement. If you don't, you're clock watching and you're going, oh, fucking hell, I'm just working in retail. This is shit.
Yeah,
this is what
that.
I want to do in my life. It's like, think about all that when you're not there and plan the things you want to do and make action and changes. But if you've got a beer, you may as well just get the job done and do a good job of it. I think it makes it all more enjoyable. Half my mates who I met through our work in retail all hated it and have terrible memories of it. All my memories of it are great because I met some of my best mates and I ran that DVD section like no one before. And it's like, things like that, it's like, it's enjoyable.
Man, that's it. You've got to make the most of it. It's like a lot of people, you see, like, I'm guilty of this. Every week I go, right, I'm going to go for a run tomorrow.
Yeah.
Right, I'm going to join the gym tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then I never do. And then I feel bad. Yeah. And then, I'm lucky I've got wonderful people around that keep you up, keep you busy. And I'm focusing on my work. But there are other people that they seem to think that they're failing if they don't. If they're not living these lives that they see online.
It's the balance of all of it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm lucky. I was talking to Ed Scrine about this a little while ago. He's another guy that I met through the podcast and just... top lad.
He seems like
he's
a
really nice lad, just got his head screwed on. I'm a fan of his work, but just even more a fan of him as a person.
Yeah.
And we were just saying, this is going to sound like the wankiest conversation ever, but we were genuinely discussing how lucky we are that we've found a fitness thing that we enjoy and look forward to. Because it is. I remember I wasn't a sporty kid at all.
No.
And all of that was just a nightmare. And CrossFit, I don't talk about it much because CrossFitters are the vegans of the fitness world where you talk about it more than you do it. And again, both are great. I love vegans, I love CrossFit, but I just don't need to shout about it constantly. But and that was it. I found that a mate of mine's a trainer and changed my life. I look forward to it. And I'll have periods where I'm not up for it.
No.
I've just had a couple of months where I've been making excuses. I've been busy with the magazine and with all sorts of other stuff. But this last a couple of weeks, I've got back into it, and it's been a joy.
Yeah,
like, it's been a joy to be exercising and to feel positive. And again, like arrogantly, to feel I look better.
Yeah,
it's such a simple thing, but it's the extremes either way. It pisses me off when people are preachy about it. Like everyone needs to get in shape and fit. It's like that doesn't have to be the goal for everyone.
No,
if you're happier. Not even simply happy. If you're simply happier not doing that, don't fucking do it. It's your life, and you should be enjoy that happiness. And
I had a personal trainer. Yeah, I had a personal trainer 2 years ago. I used to go to the gym. I was my wife and I, my ex-wife and I, were struggling. It wasn't going very well, and neither of us were sort of doing anything about it. And I didn't realise how deep rooted a lot of my problems were.
Yeah.
So I used to go to the gym, and I just being in the gym, in my head, I go, well, I've been to the gym. Even though it was pointless me being there, I was doing nothing.
Yeah,
it's like 2 minutes on the cross trainer and fuck all.
Yeah.
And there was a guy there And he was as big as Dolph Lundgren, but he looked like Steve McQueen.
Amazing.
And I looked at him, I was like, this fucking Russian dude, right? And he just walk in. Because when you see someone every day, you say hello to him, didn't you?
But he
never say hello back, you just glare at me. And I sort of shit my pants. So anyway, I'm in the gym one day and I'm fucking about, and he came striding up and he goes, what are you trying to do? I went, I'm trying to lose weight. I'm on the cross training. He's like, stop. I'm like, all right, it's just, I'm fucking trying to slow it down. Trying to be really cool. He went, what are you doing? I went, I want to lose weight. I went, what do you think I should do? Should I do more of this or that? He goes, do none at all. No point you being here. He goes, your diet is shit. Start from that.
Yeah.
He said, I'll help you. He said, I'll charge you £30 a session. He goes, but I will help you.
Yeah.
And he did. And he didn't teach me just about losing weight and getting fitter. He told me about organisation.
Yeah.
Because he was like, right, these are the things you need to bring with you. This is your book. You need this book with you. And I need this book every time you come to the gym. If you don't come with this book, I can't teach you because I can't see what we've been doing. And it was amazing. Like, I'd turn up one day with one shoe.
Yeah.
And he goes, no, can't do it. And I'm like, fuck, and it taught me. It taught me about, other things. He was completely brilliant, man.
I know that the times I struggle the most with my mental health is when I'm taking a break from exercise. It's finding the right mindsets and the right thing. For me, the best thing I had with CrossFit was just stopping making it an option. Just I had to do it.
Yeah.
Rather than, I've got time for that today. I was like, I've got to do it.
Well, that was it.
Just get it done. Don't make it. And that translates to so many things in life.
Yeah.
You can put things off. It sounds so simple and stupid. If you go, no, I can't, I've got to do that.
Yeah. Go for a walk.
Then you'll do it. Again, everyone will know. Like, again, the example I always gave was, it's weird because anyone in our industries, because we're self-employed and we're artists and whatever else, it's mad because we're doing our dream jobs and yet we'll take a day off. It's like, how many times did you just not turn up when you worked in H&B and hated it? Or when you worked... No, you were always on time, always did it.
Yeah.
And that was a job you hated. So surely you can have the same discipline in a job you love.
Yeah.
And it's finding those mindsets and finding that, those things to just trick your mind or turn it round to go, you've got to do that.
And even if you don't need to join a gym... If even like do the washing up, because you keep walking out into your kitchen, you see a big pile of dirty washing up, and that subconsciously will fuck with your head.
Yeah,
do the washing up. There's something I know people take the piss. I go, do the washing up, make your bed.
Yeah,
like do the washing and put your clothes away.
Yeah,
but just and if you do those little things, after a while, you'll go, oh fuck yeah, this is what I do now, and it becomes a thing. And
I've got a really good episode coming out of my podcast, and it's out in a few weeks. I don't know when this is coming out, but it's out in a few weeks, and it's with a guy called Tim Clare,
right?
And he's not the biggest name I've ever had on, but he used to be on the spoken word scene with me, and he's an author, and he's kind of put together this program for productivity, for getting over procrastination. And we talk a lot about it, and we talk about mental health. It's a really good episode. But one of the simplest things he has in his system is simply what's next,
right?
What do I have to do next,
rather
than what do I have to do today. And it's like literally to the point of I open my laptop, I've opened my laptop, I've opened Word, now write a couple of paragraphs. All right, I've written a couple of paragraphs. And things like just breaking it all down to each.
Yeah.
And it's so similar with, I need to do the washing up. All right, I've done that. And it's subconsciously, it's making you know that you are achieving and you can achieve.
Yes.
It's going, I've done the washing up, I've done that. Well, it's only midday, I can probably get some writing done. Or I could do this or do that. And literally was saying, and I've started using it. It's mind-blowing because any task can be really daunting if you look at the whole task. Whereas if you do break it down to what's next, get my laptop out of my bag.
Yeah.
Right, that's there. And what's it? Open it. Right, that's there. I can do that. I know I can do that bit. Can I write a novel? 100% not. Can I open my laptop?
Yeah.
Can I open Word? Yeah. Can I write a paragraph?
Yeah,
probably. Can I write another one? I'll give it a go. Do you know what I mean? It's making it these bite-sized and usable things. And I loved it. I'd never heard it so broken down as that.
That is beautiful.
And the really breaking it down as said, it gives you loads of things to tick off. Get dressed.
Yeah.
That's genuinely one of the things, particularly for self-employed people. Get dressed. All right, I've done that. I have a shower. I've had a shower. All these things, it's a really good way to think. And as I said, that podcast, if it's out or when it's out, I recommend anyone have a listen to it.
Yeah, well up for that.
I love them ones where it's not necessarily a huge name, but man, it's a potentially life-changing conversation.
It's so
someone
true.
Who's figured it out. Someone who's got it, and you sit there going, shit, you've got it. You've figured it out. This is right.
Well, like you say, because we look at the whole problem rather than cutting it down. Like little things. I realised this before. If I've got to be I hate talking on the phone.
Yeah.
I'd rather meet you.
Yeah.
And then, that's why I love texting. I love messages and things like that.
Yeah, I'm the same.
Because it's just easy. I don't know why, what that is. But if I've got to have a phone call, I'll get up, I have a shower, I'll get dressed.
Yeah.
And then I have the phone call.
Because
I just feel...
Yeah,
I don't want to be doing it in my underwear. Standing there naked.
I'd be professional.
Yeah,
I completely agree. And I love stuff like that. It's finding the cheats and hacks that work for you.
Yeah,
what make you comfortable with something, and then
perfect.
Go
man.
In.
That's it.
Love
this has been amazing.
It's been a lovely
Thank
chat.
You
Thank
so
you very much.
Man.
It's been a pleasure.
What's next for you? What are you doing next?
I've got tons of podcasts.
Yeah.
It really excites me. And it's. I say on the podcast a lot that I get more out of it than any of my listeners, but I really do. Again, I am someone who, if I didn't have the podcast, I'd have a lot less conversations.
Yeah.
And as we've said, conversations are like this. You might not have with your mates all the time, but it's the fact that we sit down and we've got a reason
to
do it.
Yeah.
It means you get to have that. So I've got that and I'm working on a few scripts. I've got a few potential acting things coming up. Continuing on.
Nice.
Insane in the membrane.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.